This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters Radio Show. This session shares one of the three segments of the Franklin Mass School Committee meeting held on Tuesday, December 8, 2020. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid format. Some of the school committee and central office personnel were in the council chambers. The remainder of the committee was remote via conference bridge, along with the community, all to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. I've split the 2-hour and 40-minute meeting into three logical segments. First, covers the opening through the discussion action items, approximately 53 minutes. Second, picks up the discussion-only items, the budget update, the K-1 return alternatives, and the reopening status through the school committee members' comments only. And that's approximately 55 minutes. The third section picks up the community comments on the reopening and then runs through the remainder of the meeting, approximately 52 minutes. They do go into executive session and do not return to public meeting. The show notes contain a link to the meeting agenda and to my notes. The meeting packet folder is also provided in the show notes, which will hold the other documents released for the meeting. And as we go to press, the superintendent's report is not yet updated to the folder. So let's listen to this segment of the school committee meeting of December 8, 2020.
Moving on to discussion only items.
Thank you. The first discussion only item is a budget update that we wanted to share with the entire committee. We presented a budget update in September and wanted to update it now, particularly as we approach the expiration of the coronavirus relief funds. We wanted to share a little bit about our budget status. So I'm going to ask Miriam to walk through some of the highlights about the memo in your packet.
Sure. So just some overall highlights you have before you, a memo. Mm-hmm. In detail, I won't go through it piece by piece, but in terms of budgetary savings, we do anticipate favorability based on retirements, resignations, leaves, and contract negotiations. We're running fewer buses, so we expect some savings there, as well as fall and winter sports, as you heard from earlier. And some prepayment of tuition at the end of last year. So overall, total roughly $1.7 million in savings. In terms of changes to revenue, we have, we are expecting Chapter 70 to be fully funded. We still don't have a state budget at this point in time, so we're waiting for that to happen. There is still talk of a federal stimulus package, but that remains to be seen. I think we're all just waiting for maybe a continued resolution so the government doesn't shut down in December on the 11th. In any event, the additional revenue that we'll see in terms of reductions in transportation pay-to-ride revenue will impact next year, as well as fall and winter sports, which will impact next year. We will see a reduction in preschool tuition and lifelong learning. Our lifelong learning program is suffering right now as we are operating our solutions program. It is running in a deficit, but we think it's very important to continue offering the solutions program to this, to provide the service for families who really do need it. Mm-hmm. Some added expenses that we've talked about earlier in the year in September were based on enrollment, the addition of 3 elementary teachers, and also given our remote learning environment and constant video streaming that taxes our aging technology, and we have a need to increase our bandwidth from 2 to 10 gigabytes. So Verizon is in the process of installing a 10 gigabyte line, which could annually cost us about $60,000, but it will cost us less in this current year based on when that project is completed. Of course, you know, the school committee's budget is a bottom line, and I expect to be within that bottom line. I do summarize some grant funding for you. We still have our entitlement grants that are operating as expected. Our additional ESSER grant is operating. We have hired 5 interventionists that generally work about 12 to 15 hours a week to provide additional support to students to close learning gaps. This grant particularly goes through the end of September in 2022. So that's one of our last sources to use for expenses because it runs for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. Versus our coronavirus relief money, which expires at the end of this month. And I've given you a summary of some of the things that we've spent on that grant, where we are mostly funding elementary staff, digital learning integrationists, activity monitors, long-term and permanent subs, ESPs. We rented tents for outdoor mask breaks. Temporary fencing was put in at Oak Street and at ECDC. Technology was purchased for laptops for teachers to support remote learning and other devices, to the tune of basically, in terms of total spending, $743,000 at this point in time. We do have approximately $413,000 left over in that grant, and it is for expenses that will be occurring with a beneficial use by the end of December. Otherwise, we will utilize some of the costs at the Virtual Learning Academy to cover the rest of this grant. Happy to work to answer any questions, and would love to acknowledge the staff in my office who did an awesome job helping to prepare this.
Okay. Let me just go through and we'll ask members. Jen, any comments, questions, follow up with Miriam?
Thank you, Miriam. Always thoughtful and thorough, so I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Tim?
Sorry, I was on mute. I'm good.
Okay, Tim. Judy?
All set.
Okay, Judy. MJ?
She said no.
Oh, she said no. Okay. Denise?
I said no.
Okay, sorry. Sorry, MJ. Elise?
I'm all set. Thanks, Miriam.
All set, and I'm all set. Great. Thanks, Miriam, as usual. Excellent job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, kindergarten and grade one.
Thank you. So in your packet is a memo that outlines, at your request, some scenarios related to bringing kindergarten and grade one students back full and in person. Wanted to provide a high-level overview of some of the findings that the administrative team has been looking at and come to related to bringing K and one back full and in person. Want to really share that we agree for K and one in particular, our youngest learners, but also across the board, we're so eager to have students back in person and learning. We've been, I think, energized and excited about hybrid in terms of having students come in this fall. But it doesn't replace that full and in-person experience. And we do want to make sure that we can do it when health and safety practices make it feasible. So we've walked each school building, we've reviewed staffing, transportation, food service, storage implications, and other items to bring a preliminary high-level outline to you. We have made the assumption that this is based on the current enrollment of students. We've been wanting to survey K and one families about what their interest would be or participation would be if we were to be full and in person versus a remote only option, but didn't feel that it would be wise to send a survey out until we had more clarity down to the school level about what potential implications and trade-offs might be. And so now we're better positioned to put something out to families to understand what their inclination would be. An outstanding question would be, would families be able to remain remote if we were to shift to a full in-person instructional model for grades K and one? And our recommendation would be that we would be looking to invest in the full and in-person model and not to split the teachers in too many different directions. I think that if students were to remain hybrid, they would have very, very limited interaction with the teacher over the course of the week. So we have outlined three scenarios for you. The first one comes from our reopening plan with additional clarity and information now that we know our class sizes, we know the square footage of our classrooms. And we had said at the time of reopening that we could have full and in-person instruction at the elementary level at 3 feet of distance. now that things have sort of settled down with respect to class sizes and numbers of students choosing remote in different sections, what we would find is that full and in-person instruction could occur for kindergarten and grade one somewhere between 3 feet and 6 feet, depending upon the class section and the school. So it would vary depending upon the location. For example, classrooms at Oak Street and Keller are larger, and classrooms at Davis Thayer and Kennedy and are smaller, and classrooms at Jefferson and Parmenter fall somewhere in between. And so when we look at class sizes and cohorts, somewhere between 3 and 6 feet, it would be something that we could accomplish. 6 feet is the standard that we have kind of set across the district in terms of socially distanced classrooms. So that would be kind of a change to that practice. We could also consider alternative spaces, such as school libraries, for example, as classroom locations. There would be a ripple effect on other programs and services depending upon the school location. Reducing the distancing standard would increase the number of close contacts we would identify in the school setting. So that would be an implication if we were to go to less than 6 feet. We would be looking at modification to transportation routes with more students coming through in those two grades through the week. And in some cases, lunch arrangements for some schools would need to be reconsidered. And depending upon the setting, we may need to shift from lunch in the classroom to lunch in the cafeteria, or we may need to do two shifts of lunch, because we would need to have 6 feet of distance for the students to have lunch together. So that is one scenario where it would be feasible under those kind of implications and circumstances. Scenario two involves maintaining 6 feet of distancing and the ways in which full and in-person could be accomplished. The ability to be full and in-person at 6 feet varies across school buildings with some additional furniture removal. And if there, some of our classrooms could add desks and we might be able to accomplish it. In some sections, it would be dependent upon the number of students who might choose virtual only. And if that were the case, with additional desks, we would be able to accomplish full and in person at 6 feet. But there are some locations where in person at 6 feet of distancing would not be possible, and we would need to think more creatively. Namely Davis Thayer and Kennedy, which has smaller classrooms than the other elementary schools, and they particularly at Kennedy don't have a lot of alternative locations and alternative spaces. Davis Thayer has limited alternative spaces as well. So the idea there would be to leverage some of the additional spaces at Keller and Oak. Both of those schools would be able to have classrooms come from Davis Thayer and Kennedy and fit within the school building. There would be some ripple effects with respect to busing and transportation, as well as student services and special education services that we would adjust to. That would leave the remaining classrooms elsewhere in the district to be split between two rooms. This was something that we had considered in the summer, where we might have a classroom, for example, of 20 students split into two groups in two different rooms. I think the big pressure point here would be the feasibility of hiring additional staff to supervise and support those classrooms. Staffing right now is one of our biggest pressure points, with staff quarantining either due to themselves or to family members. Typical reasons why staff may be out for personal days or bereavement leave. We are really struggling on a daily basis to cover. We don't have enough subs. We have principals teaching PE, we have principals teaching art, we have principals pitching in. We're at the ready to go to classes and cover. We are really concerned about coverage, and we continue to try to recruit more people to provide supervision within the classrooms. We would, in this scenario, we'd have some storage considerations in moving furniture, transportation considerations, and lunch arrangements may also need to shift. And we would want to be forthcoming with families about that, because we know that for some families, the lunch setup is actually one of the deciding factors that leaves them feeling comfortable or not with their children in school. In scenario three would be the exploration of half days, where, for example, cohort A would be in school for the first half of the day. There would be a transition point, and cohort B would be in on the second half of the day. This would be perhaps the biggest change to family schedules and may be difficult in some circumstances. It would provide that 5 days of continuous instruction for all students every day at 6 feet of distancing. It would, we'd have to relook at our elementary school schedules in terms of specials and how we're providing specials to students. And across the VLA, this would have more of an effect on other grade levels in that regard. We did quantify in this case, in the other cases we had yet to quantify what additional transportation would cost for midday bus runs, approximating $115,000. And there would be cleaning at the midpoint of the day, which may be difficult to manage with current custodial staff, depending upon the space and the circumstances. So those are the three scenarios that we've been looking at and talking about. Still additional, I think, information to gather, particularly from families. We recognize that there are many challenges for our kindergarten and grade one students, particularly in the hybrid and learning at home on 3 days a week. We are putting together a small group enlisting kindergarten and grade one teachers who are experiencing some successes and have some best practices to share, working with literacy and math specialists, working with Joyce and Paula and Lucas in order to provide some resources, support, best practices, working with our principals and assistant principals as well to provide additional help related to instruction and scheduling. So our next steps involve that family survey and putting some supports in place while we continue to explore these scenarios. The last piece, just to put out on the committee's radar screen, is that should there be additional families choosing remote through the VLA in kindergarten in particular, but also in grade one, and looking at the class sizes there, we would probably make a recommendation to add another kindergarten section, add another grade one section at the VLA, look for, if the numbers didn't work out, look for volunteers to make a switch. And given some of our hiring challenges, I think we would probably look within and may need to collapse sections internally in order to staff that VLA position rather than hiring an additional teacher. So those are some of the factors at play. And I think that, you know, we're happy and I think need to continue to look at this and continue to explore for kindergarten, grade one, and quite frankly, for, it may feel premature to say this, especially with the numbers ticking up, but there's light at the end of the tunnel. There's hope on the horizon with vaccines rolling out, and we are going to be in a position to welcome all of our students back. And so I do think that we need to be thinking about that and hopeful about that to that point in time when all of our students are back full and in person. So we'll be thinking about it for K and one, as well as grades 2 through 12 and beyond. I think we're happy to take any questions or comments.
Let's go through. Jen, questions, comments?
Yeah, I do have a couple. So first, I do think that the parent survey is an important piece of this. It's really hard to think of logistical solutions when we don't know the numbers that we're playing with. So the hypotheticals of how many may move to the virtual learning academy and who wouldn't, it's really, you're playing with so many variables. I don't know how you could potentially come up with any viable solutions when we don't have any kind of estimation as to what families would be looking towards. I know we've heard from a lot of families and who are looking for that increased in-person, but I think that that survey piece is going to be a really important piece of driving this initiative forward. So I do think that that's something that I would like to see rolled out sooner than later. The other piece is, you know, I appreciate the overview. I'm a little disappointed in the lack of details associated with each of the plans and kind of talking about the pros and cons on a building-based level. So I was looking for a little bit more as far as class capacity and size and, you know, more than just general statements about Davis Thayer classes would be a problem. You know, what are we looking at? You know, how many classes were we looking at? And as far as like the feasibility of it. So I guess for me, that was just a little disappointing. I think that I was anticipating a little more detail in that sense, since we had been waiting for a couple of weeks to see this information. Other pieces, the other thing is, you know, Mr. Angelo did a great job, right? I hate to keep going back to it. He was thorough, he was thoughtful, and he was able to provide safe athletic opportunities for well over 400 kids in the fall and another 250 for the winter. And the variables that he's playing with, dealing with different sports, different rules, different capacities, different parameters, logistics, was able to happen. So I'm a little disheartened to think that we're not at a point where we can have more thoughtful conversations about bringing our K and one learners back, because I do think that, you know, Mr. Angelo is a great example of if we're creative and we're thoughtful, then things can get done and we can create these opportunities for kids. So I look forward to seeing some additional information about this moving forward. I'm optimistic as well, you know, with the vaccine and having in person, but I don't think I really want to kind of, you know, hang my hat on that at this point, especially when we're hearing comments from Jessica Kelly at the beginning who said that, you know, my kindergartners aren't learning to read. So I guess it is what it is. And I am absolutely not okay with family statements like that. So, thank you.
Thanks, Jen. Tim, any comments, questions?
Related to the survey, when the survey goes out, it was occurring to me, like, if families are going to be weighing in on the different scenarios, I hope we can kind of present the survey in a way where, like, people aren't like, if they're going to choose their favorite or whatever, or it seems like who would choose option 3 over 2, right? You're choosing a half day over a full day in school. So what I'm saying is, if the survey goes out, I'm hoping that it's worded in a way where, you know, people are weighing each one of those individually. As if, you know, if this was the only option available to you, would, you know, what would your choice be? So we could gather information that way, as opposed to people weighing in on what their, you know, preferred choice might be. Because it seems like if we don't have enough teachers to do 2, but we can figure out a way to do 3, we wouldn't want to lose the opportunity to get insight into people who would say, well, if I knew 2 wasn't possible, I would have chose 3. So just kind of, you know, as long as we could be thoughtful in the way we distribute that survey so we could get good information back to help us make choices going forward. That's what I would stress.
Thanks, Tim. Judy?
Okay, I would have to agree with Jen. I thought we were much further along in this process than what we are now. When do you estimate that you're going to have an answer for the parents of children in kindergarten and grade 1 when they would be back to school full time? Are we talking after Christmas coming back? Are we talking February? When are we talking this is going to happen? It's already almost the middle of December and we're still talking about this. Thank you.
Did you want to say anything?
I don't have a date to share.
Very good. I didn't know if you wanted to jump in. MJ?
Oh, yeah. I have a few, just making some notes. Okay, so the 3-to-1 scenarios that were presented. Yes, you know, much appreciate the time, you know, that has been put into each one of them. You know, there's so many things go into, you know, each one of those scenarios. I mean, realistically, can this be done, Sarah? I know a lot of people are putting a lot of time into it. I really and truly hope that the, you know, kindergarten and first grade, you know, families, I don't doubt that you're being upfront and honest, but just to answer the question, can it be done?
I think that some of it depends on how the survey data comes back and what the numbers are. That's going to have a lot of bearing in terms of various implications. You know, I think that I'm of the same belief as Jen in terms of the instructional quality, particularly for kindergarten and grade one. So I don't want to give up and say, no, it can't be done. I think that we need survey data in order to know where the numbers are and the intentions of families. We'll get that quickly, and that'll help really pin down the feasibility. I think there are some real challenges, particularly the staffing challenges as it relates to additional supervision.
Okay, all right, thank you. All right, next question you already answered. Okay. So eventually we'll have a total financial impact to bring the younger kids back to school, correct?
Yes, we'll continue to bring more detail specificity, including financial pieces.
Okay, and you mentioned the supports that are being developed to assist teachers and families that can be put in place to assist with the remote days. The concerns of the families of the K-1 learners, they're not new. And the kids have been back to school for a couple of months now. When would these new ideas for, you know, presenting, the information on remote days, when would that help be available for the, for the teachers and, you know, more importantly, for the families? Because I've heard from several families about frustrated children. I'm sure we all have heard from some folks, too many young kids in tears and developing a strong dislike for school, which is the last thing that we need these kids to be headed towards. So when would some help be available, for these teachers and children, or families, sorry?
So I think we're looking to help people as soon as possible. I think what's been happening is we've been trying to problem solve within a particular building. And this is a more collaborative effort across all six of our schools to identify and highlight and share those best practices and resources. And so we're motivated, and it's on our agenda for the principal's meeting tomorrow to continue to move forward with this work and provide supports and resources across our schools.
Okay, thanks, Sarah. Next question is about the break times that the kindergarten and first grade students have when they're in the remote setting. Are all of these breaks included in the DESE time and learning requirements? Because there seem to be an excessive number of break minutes.
I think Some of that may depend a little bit on the teacher. We have some expectations that are put out related to time for teacher connection at morning meeting, teacher connection at the closing point of the day, and multiple points of contact during the day. Some teachers, I think, are applying more synchronous learning, and some are applying more asynchronous. And that's kind of a design that we purposely set up for their professional judgment. But these are some of the things that we want to take a look at a bit more systemically, make sure that kids are supported and taught throughout the day. In terms of time on learning, very specifically to kindergarten, there is a different and lesser expectation in kindergarten than in grade one. But in time on learning, we would have the same expectations for grade one that we'd have for other elementary grades in terms of the minutes of direct instruction.
Okay. And do you know, I don't know, but with the kindergarten and first grade students across the district, I've spoken with people from a couple of the schools, but are the break times, are the schedule is all the same across the district, correct?
It can vary. It can vary by, with some changes and some tweaks here and there. I think some of these detailed questions related to schedules is something that if the committee were to wish and see more detail about the first grade schedules, kindergarten schedules, I'd have to come back to you with more information.
Okay, consider yourself asked. I would love to see that information. it's hard for all of us on the committee. Well, I'm speaking for myself, but I'm just figuring that it does, it's hard on everybody. And I get we're in an unprecedented time. And nobody has done this before. We're trying to do the best that we can. But it is just so frustrating hearing from parents that, their kids don't like school. They're unhappy. I couldn't agree with Jen more on the statement that the parent at the beginning that, her kindergartners aren't reading. And it's not okay that, families say, well, it is what it is. And my last question, when will this survey be going out?
We are in the process of putting it together. We'll get it out shortly. I certainly would like the information before the winter break.
Okay, so within the next week?
I think we can have it out within the next week.
Okay, that's great. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, MJ. Denise?
Yes. So first I want to thank you, Dr. Hearn, and your staff for completing the walkthroughs and pulling this together so quickly for us to review. No one is disputing that the best place for students, especially our youngest learners, is in our classrooms. COVID is still new enough that we don't have all the information to make sound decisions, so we're doing the best we can with the information we have. Governor Baker earlier today released his plan on scaling back the state's reopening plan, and we're talking about bringing more people back into buildings. This is kind of a mixed message for me and feels like a disregard for the health and safety of faculty, staff, and our students. I guess my first question is, have we surveyed staff on their comfortability of bringing students back all in person?
We have not surveyed staff. We did share this memo with staff in advance, and there have been a couple of communications going out indicating that we were looking at the prospect of this for kindergarten and grade one. I think that there are I think that there are kind of mixed feelings, quite frankly, among the staff, anecdotally and qualitatively, what I would share with you. But we don't have kind of quantified information. I think that there's staff that would be very concerned about bringing additional people back into the building. And I think that there would also be staff who recognize or who would, you know, similar to the workload piece, feel that the change to phone in person would kind of impact the instruction in a positive way because they're spending so much time in the hybrid setting, planning and adjusting their practice.
Thank you. So also in reviewing your memo, I have several concerns. Logistically, everything we have in place up until now was created for the 6 feet of space, teacher schedules, room assignments, where students have snacks and lunches, where, how and where specials are held. Additional kids would mean more staff be present that we just don't have. Do we change the entire staff schedule? Are we talking about pulling staff from second to fifth grade to cover K in one? Is this part of the ripple effect you mentioned in scenario one? It seems other grades would be affected by bringing K in one back all in person. Also, K in one would potentially be 3 feet while everyone else is 6 feet. Have we considered how this affects specials and special education staff who would then be working in some cases at 6 feet and others 3 feet?
So there is some concern about having a different set of standards in terms of distancing standards when if you had one set of standards for some students in the school and not others in the school, given what some of the other spaces have been set up to be with paint on the floor and you know, kind of markings in that regard. So there is some concern about inconsistency there that has been raised by some members of the team. And then in terms of more staffing, I think the biggest area where more staffing would be required is if we were maintaining a 6 foot of distance in splitting classrooms of students into more spaces across the school. That would be where the greatest implications for additional staffing would be. And I think one scenario would be potentially having to pull staff from other other places to provide supervision if we weren't able to hire.
Okay. Thank you. Only a few more.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
So inequity for me is a big issue. You mentioned it in scenario two, where it will not be equitable across all schools. So for example, you mentioned moving Kennedy and DT to other complexes. In addition to the transportation implications, what would this mean for specials and special education? For example, if there's one staff member who works with all elementary students at Kennedy, how are they to split their time between the two separate sections of students? I mean, how are we going to affect, like, do we just hire more staff? Will kids be left at a disadvantage because they're not getting
the services? We wouldn't do that. We wouldn't leave kids at a disadvantage, but we would have to reassign and rethink our allocation of special ed support services and personnel if sections were to go from one school to another.
Okay. You know, if a parent has a student in fourth grade and in first grade, so just, you know, I have a few friends, you know, fourth and first grade. How are they supposed to pick up their kids if one is at Kennedy and the other is at the other complex? I mean, has that been kind of addressed? I'm just.
It is a potential implication that may affect that family would be if they were not bused, that there may be two pickups.
Okay, so there would be two pickups, okay. Scenario three sounds like a nightmare. The additional transportation costs and schedules, I mean, the time between the two cohorts for the custodial staff to clean everything. I don't think uprooting our elementary school schedules and special schedules makes sense for half day options. And then my final question. So if we do bring back K in one students full time, some families may want to shift to VLA. And you had mentioned how we'd have to hire another teacher. So we'd have three. So this means that someone who has had Mrs. Smith, for example, up until now, we'd jumble them up and they might have Mrs. Jones going forward. Like there's no guarantee that they would stay in that VLA classroom?
I think we would strive to maintain children with their teacher that was assigned to them from the beginning. But if the numbers worked, you know, depending on how the numbers worked, I think it's a consequence that could come to pass that a teacher assigned to a, for a particular student would change.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Yep, all set.
Elise?
Hi, thanks. Great questions, everyone. Thank you. I join the others who are supporting this push to get KN1 back full in person, though I understand the complexity. Sarah, you made a good point about doing away with the hybrid if the full in-person becomes feasible, and I think that's an important point. And I know staffing is a huge issue, really, in multiple scenarios. So I'm wondering if I could request if we could get a personnel update similar to the one we had, I think it was in September, that listed recent hires, open positions, subs, budgetary considerations with the COVID funding. Sort of an update. I think Judy had asked for it the first time and it was really helpful. So if we could see an updated personnel update, that would be great.
Sure, we can do that.
Thanks. Is that it, Elise?
All set? Yeah.
She said yes.
Oh, she did. Okay, yes. Good.
She nodded.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to say, just sort of echo a lot of what people have said. I don't think there's anyone here who does not want to get all our kids back. Particular K-1 kids and the toll it's taken. Our teachers, just like the health workers out there, I think all of us do, essential workers. They are on the front lines of all of this, the toll it's taking on families and our kids. This is a pandemic. I would suggest, my thinking is that no matter what option is chosen, the bottom line keeps coming down to staffing, availability of people to be in the classrooms. And what we've known from the beginning is, or way back months ago, was that the fall and winter was going to be terrible. It's proving to be exactly that. My concern and two is we've got to get the kids back. We get them back, bring them back, that's great. And then we have no staff because this pandemic is spreading rapidly. It's not isolating teachers and ESPs and substitutes. It's impacting everybody. So we bring the kids back. And right now, and I know we're working on, I know our legislators are working on getting more testing. We know in New York City, they're bringing the kids back, but they're bringing them back and they're testing once a week, random teaching and teachers and student testing once a week. So I'm going to just keep saying that this comes down. We all want the kids back, but we have to keep our eye on the fact that this right now, as Governor Baker said, they're closing everything down again. So we just have to be careful and watch that. And I know that that's a huge piece of all of this. I'm just speaking for myself, but I think that it comes down to me from what listening to Dr. Hearn that staffing is a huge issue in this and it will continue to be. We do not yet know the impact of Thanksgiving. We're just starting to see the numbers rising. We don't know how that's going to impact staff. So I think that always in the equation, we have to keep that. I'm just, you know, sharing my viewpoint like everyone else. So. And I know the testing, working on that, right, in terms of doing pool testing, and it's crucial, and contact tracing. And the more cases we have, the more complex contact tracing becomes, the more difficult it is to keep control of all of this. So I think we have to keep that in mind, no matter what option is chosen, it always comes down to staff. And I think, I'm just gonna reiterate, front lines, the teachers are essential workers, and we've been talking about is when that vaccine comes out, they better sure be considered on the front lines of who needs to be getting that vaccine. If we're going to get kids back to school, we got to think about making sure that our teachers are the ones that are considered essential workers because they are crucial to this whole thing. And I know I'm being dramatic, but that's, you know. Anyway, carry on. Go ahead. Sorry. Anyone, any other comments?
Yeah,
go ahead, Jan.
Question. Yeah. So after listening to Denise, I was just curious. You know, looking at the half day model, that wouldn't increase our staffing, correct? It would just be that they would see the two groups of students morning and afternoon and minimize
right.
the amount of time.
Right. time that they would have to dual plan for remote and in person?
Right, that would not include additional staff.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I understood that right. And for the Virtual Learning Academy, would it be, if we did move into that half-day model, that the Virtual Learning Academy could also follow that model to absorb any increase in student enrollment that may happen, so that the consistency and equity for in-person students attending and those choosing virtual remote learning would be equitable, as they both have those morning and afternoon sessions, and it would minimize the need for additional staffing?
I'd have to give that a little bit more thought. The intention isn't to necessarily go to a half day for kindergarten in one. With time on learning, it would be kind of in person for half the day and then asynchronous learning at the other point in time. What you would end up doing is creating a situation for the VLA that could model that. And could be one possible way to absorb the students.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jen. Anyone else? And we'll do public comment after we do the updated reopening status. And then if there's public comment, I just wanted to give Dr. Hearn a chance to give, and then I'll make sure that there's time for public comment.
Great. So I won't walk you through everything in the status report, but I have been updating this bi-weekly, and we've started to take the COVID communication and COVID metrics, positive cases, and display it graphically, and we will be updating that weekly on our website. And so what you can see is that Franklin continues to be in the yellow with respect to the number of cases and the percent positivity. Norfolk County and Massachusetts are also listed for you. The last week of reporting, Franklin had actually dipped lower in terms of average daily cases per 100,000 and the percent positivity rate. And we continue to monitor these on a weekly basis with information coming out on Thursday night. This is actually the past 4 weeks. Sorry about that last time. It was the past 2 weeks of cases in Franklin. We did, of course, have a shortened week. So the number of students and staff in quarantine are reduced there, as were the positive cases during the week of Thanksgiving. But we're keeping track of the cases across the district and think that it's important for you to know what's happening with respect to quarantine. The number of cases, just to repeat, because I think it's come up again in the community related to what the Department of Ed reports. The Department of Elementary and Secondary Education receives a call from us when we have positive cases. We tell them the details that we're required to, but they only report publicly on cases that have been within the building, that have been in the building within the past 7 days. And most of our cases are situations where the individual has not been in the building within the past 7 days. There's been a few exceptions within the past couple of weeks where the individual may have been in, and so the Department of Ed is starting to show those numbers. But the vast majority of cases, the individual has not been in the past 7 days. Throughout the rest of the report, there are some things that we've kind of already touched upon and talked through tonight. But we break it down from teaching and learning to digital learning. We have information there about SWAC and what SWAC is doing to support the whole child. We continue to monitor staff stress and well-being and the staffing that is in our buildings. In terms of health and safety, contact tracing is becoming multiple people's full-time jobs. It is taking a lot of time to do contact tracing in the schools for students and for staff when cases are positive. I would note that other districts have hired contact tracers and some support in this area, which is something that I think is worth considering for temporary purposes during the swell. Another thing that I wish to elaborate on is the change in guidance related to the CDC, from the CDC related to quarantine. As a school system, we have not changed our quarantine expectations. We are still working with the quarantine expectations that we previously had been. I had a phone conversation with a representative from the Department of Ed last night, looking for some advice, and they were having a meeting on it, and we may hear more information later this week from the Department of Ed guiding us on whether or not to move towards the new CDC guidance. The guidance shortens the quarantine period, but it does raise the risk level a little bit, because there will be a small percentage of cases that are still active or infectious, potentially at the end of that quarantine period. And then we've had some evolution in terms of testing programs. We reached out to Concentric by Ginkgo, which is a no-cost, one-time baseline testing program for staff. And we're beginning to put the process in place to have a baseline saliva PCR test for staff in January. And I think the other matters I had already brought up in the superintendent's report.
Before we open it to public comment, any more feedback from committee members?
Yeah, I just have a quick question.
Go ahead, Jen.
Are you talking separately about the dashboard, or is that embedded in this piece?
That was in this piece.
Okay, so I think that's a great tool, and I think it came out really nice, and I think it's extremely helpful for the community to see that information and that snapshot that was provided. The only recommendation I would have that may be helpful is to create some building-based data and district-wide data. That would, you know, just kind of create some relevance as to what we're seeing in each building and then versus the district. I think another piece that I would like to see embedded in that is percentages. So I know that right now there's a 17 case number on there, which looks high, but if you take 17 cases and our student enrollment is at currently about 4,900, that's a 0.3% case positive case rate, and that doesn't include staff members. So I think the percentage piece, similar to the state data that comes out, just creates a better perspective as to the numbers that we're looking at instead of just a base number.
Yeah. Thanks, Jen. Anyone else before we?
I have something.
Oh, go ahead, Denise. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
So a number of staff are testing positive or are in quarantine right now. I know that we're having a hard time finding subs and such. There are schools in Massachusetts who have had to pivot to full remote due to lack of staffing. Are you concerned that we'll have to close schools if too many staff are absent? I know teachers don't have to call in until that morning. Do we have a backup plan set in place?
We are concerned that we may have to pivot to remote for a day or a time period if too many people are out. And it is kind of a day-to-day situation where it's all hands on deck to provide coverage and supervision and support. So our backup is to pivot to remote, and we hope we don't have to do that.
And I'd just like to also just stress the importance of focusing on how we can move ahead and support our teachers during this time.
Yep. Anyone else before we open up? Can you see
anyone? Anne?
Yeah. Go ahead, Elise. Go ahead.
I have a question that's like a little bit more specific about the VLA. So I'm wondering about the availability of textbooks and other reading material for VLA elementary students. I've heard some families are wondering if the hybrid peers are using textbooks and books from their school libraries when VLA is doing most of their reading online. I'm wondering if that's the case, and if it is, if that's equitable, and what's the plan going forward as far as getting hard copy books and textbooks to the VLA students in upper elementary?
Sure. So we're in the process. There have been pickups for VLA students out of Jefferson that have happened as coordinated by our math and literacy specialists. And with Joyce and Ed Kaufman, who is administering the VLA, they're putting in place a more formal and predictable process for pickups on a regular basis. Joyce can elaborate a little bit more about that plan. And I think she can also address what's happening with the libraries as well as elementary textbooks.
Great. Hi, everybody. So to answer your question, there's a few things in play. First of all, we don't use a lot of textbooks at the elementary level. We really, our curriculum are the Massachusetts frameworks, and how teachers teach that can vary pretty significantly, and that's okay. The what teachers have to teach is what we dictate, and that comes from the Massachusetts frameworks. The how they teach is the art and craft of teaching, and that is something that we do leave up to the teachers with our guidance, and along with the programs that we do adopt. So you will see variability there. In terms of VLA, there are books going home in this month in the predictable and newly developed schedule that is actually Mr. Kaufman sending that home tomorrow to VLA families. It's been a process that we've just recently redeveloped and refined. And those pickup dates for grades 3 to 5 will be December 16th, and for K-2 will be December 17th. And then after that, it'll be on Wednesday. And it'll be on a predictable schedule, like I said, that's going home next week, going home tomorrow. And it'll be, it will go home tomorrow, right? So in any event, the books that are going home, especially for some of our younger kids, we just bought some paper copies of decodable readers. Those are going home. And the literacy specialists have also been working on individualized book selections for some of the students as well for reading. And we'll continue that. We started with the younger grades. That will continue to filter up through the upper grades as well. And in terms of libraries, a lot of the, it's to the best of my knowledge, library books are not going home. The last time I checked with principals, which was a couple of weeks ago, they were not going home. It was concerned about shared materials and disinfection of materials as they came back. So I don't think that's an equity issue at this moment, because libraries have basically been unused this year. Which is unfortunate, but nonetheless true. So we are working on the, like I said, the textbook and or general book distribution, and there will be a predictable schedule for picking up materials for VLA kids. We've purchased some additional resources as well that are going home, and the teachers have been working with the literacy and math specialists to assemble those materials for distribution.
Great, thank you. We've gotten a lot of really great materials so far, and I think it's just, you know, we want the books too. Thank you so much, that's helpful.
Sure, thanks Elise.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana. Copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.